W in Washington, and WBAI New York. I'm Chris Bingert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to all who contributed to or are thinking about contributing to WPFW's Relocation Fund and to those who attended the reggae concert or open house. Your generous donations are what make all things WPFW possible. This is Miyuki. Special thanks to Joyce and James Kilgore, who made the commemorative Ellington 125 t-shirt and tote possible. They are still available as thank you gifts. Details at WPFWFM.org. Thanks to Mrs. Gloria Turner for everything you do. And thanks to you for partnering with WPFW to help build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features humanitarian crisis in Sudan and Ladysmith Black Mambazo. Africa Now is next. Welcome to Shaw Mwizo Mtali. The music in the background is Jabana by Nori and his Dopa band. It has been over a year and 3 months since war broke out in Sudan between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. Over 9 million people have been displaced internally and externally as refugees abroad, and millions face acute food insecurity. The war has impacted children heavily. It has been noted as many as 19 million children are out of school due to the war. Recently had a conversation with Nimat Amadi. She is the president and founder of Darfur Women Action Group, in which she discusses the dire conditions Sudanese are facing due to war in their country. Here is the conversation. Nimat Amadi, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you for being on the show. And if you could just give us an update on the situation in Sudan and how the war is affecting civilians on the ground, the humanitarian crisis there, since you've been in that area recently.
Well, thank you. Speaking about the situation on the ground in Sudan, unfortunately, the situation is extremely dire right now. It has been more than a year and a half since nearly a year and a half since the war started, and the violence and expansion of war is increasing by the day and hour, where attack on civilians have been perpetrated by the rebel support forces, shelling, bombing of civilians' homes, occupation of civilians' homes, looting properties, forcing hundreds of thousands of people out of their homes, and also blockade humanitarian aid. At the same time, the Sudan Armed Forces is using airstrike, and they mostly bomb civilians' homes, public services, including hospitals, bridges, water services, electricity. And on top of that, they cut the communication service. People can't even call for help or reach their loved ones. Recently, we have seen escalated attack in Darfur, in particular in Al-Fashir, where 2.8 million people are living there, some of whom have been displaced 20 years ago from Darfur, and they have yet to return home. The only reason they are unable to return home and fearful to return home because their attackers have yet to be apprehended or held accountable, which is back the Janjaweed militias who were on camel horse and horses back today. they are grown, more sophisticated, with more training, with more equipment, with more ammunition. And they also have enablers in the region, like having external actors, like regional players, such as the United Arab Emirates, who have been supplying their support forces with weapon, ammunition, and money to destroy the country and devastate the people. And in recent months, Al-Fashir have been under siege. There is no access to humanitarian aid. Thousands of people who have been displaced from across Darfur early when the rebel support forces has taken over a city after a city. Many people came to Al-Fashir because at the moment Al-Fashir was under a locally led negotiated ceasefire. Unfortunately, that's no longer the case. Recently, Al-Fashir became the number one target, and there were announcements by the rebel support forces affiliate calling on them to say, attack the population, clean the neighborhoods in your way. Unless you do so, you can't control Al-Fashir. And by doing so, they have killed so many people, and including most of them are women and children. Recently, they have also bombed two hospitals, the only places where people are have been seeking emergency assistance. Right now, they both are out of services. So you can imagine, when they bombed the Southern Al-Fashir Hospital, there were 900 people who have been wounded, who were receiving treatment from that hospital. And when that happened, many people were left to die. Unfortunately, also recently, the rebel support forces has expanded its reach and attack into the central Sudan, including as far as Sinnar and Sinjar. And this has increased the suffering because many people who fled Khartoum, first they went to central Sudan in Madani. During the attack in Madani back in the spring, many people have fled to the area of Sinnar, Sinjar, Damazin, and other rural area there. And now people have nowhere to go with the recent attack in Sinjar and Sinnar. And unfortunately, they are still perpetrating crimes against innocent civilians. We rarely see them fight one another, but they mainly are targeting civilians. And that's why it is very, very difficult right now for civilians population all this time without any humanitarian assistance or civilian protection effort on the ground.
And you mentioned some of the places in the central southern Sudan and also briefly we talked about Darfur. Darfur is also where this rapid support forces, as you mentioned earlier, is germinated from way back over 20 years ago when they were called the Janjaweed. And if you could expand a bit more on the plight of people in Darfur currently, because it looks like the rapid support forces are trying to make that their base as well of operation.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, when it comes to Darfur, even though we've seen confrontation between the rebel support forces and the Sudan armed forces in the capital, in places like that. But unfortunately, in Darfur, the story is very different. The rebel support forces are mainly targeting civilians. I think stemming from the report coming out from Al Jundayna last year, around this time, the slaughter of the Masalit people, it is ethnically driven systemic attack against indigenous African people in Darfur. And these are the same people who have been singled out to be targeted for extermination 20 years ago. They are now again under attack. And currently, nearly 99.9% of Darfur is under the control of the rebel support forces. And when they come into a city, they first surround the city, put the city under siege, preventing people fleeing, preventing people from coming into the city, those who may bring fuel, food, or medicine. And then they round people up. They loot food storages. They loot the markets. They loot even hospitals and pharmacies, and they control water sources. And so it is quite clear that they are intending to kill civilians because they eliminate all survival means. And many, that is why in West Darfur, when they launched that massacre, they also control water sources and they prevented people from seeking emergency assistance. For many people wounded there, they were left to die. Families were prevented from burying their relative bodies or taking those who are wounded to find emergency health assistance. And it's continued to be the same in across the entire Darfur. And now, recently in Al-Fashir, we have seen the same pattern of the attack. So the suffering of the people of Darfur have been allowed to go for far, far too long. And now people are no longer there. The resilience over the years, they have been hoping that there will be change. Unfortunately, now people have nowhere to go. Back then, where people attacked in the villages, and they will flee, they would flee to the large cities where they put camps in the outskirts of those cities. Right now, those cities and the internal displaced camps where over 3 million people have been living there for 20 years are under attack. So now people are going back into the villages, but there is no villages for them to go. There is no place for them to go. And unfortunately, most Darfur area are not in the border with any country. Like in North Darfur, Al-Fashir, the closest place to go is Libya. Many people have died in the desert attempting to flee the attack in Al-Fashir. Some people will try to go to southern Sudan. It is too far for them, or to go to Port Sudan or to the Egyptian border. Many people died as a result of hunger, thirsty, and still people are dying today, and they're very, very isolated. And the recent attack there used to be a small scale of emergency response by including some of our organization staff, other locally led organization, community leaders, youth group, and some of the international organizations such as Doctors Without Borders. This recent attack has forced everyone to flee. Recently, in a report, AMASAFE has reported that their staff who have been rendering health assistance to those in need have been have come under attack 30 times, and they are no longer able to operate there. So they left, but they are calling for the international community to protect civilians and also to create an enabling environment for people to render the life-saving assistance. Otherwise, by the end of this, if we stay longer, we will see people die in masses as they are dying right now.
Again, that's Nimet Amadi. She is the president and founder of Darfur Women Action Group. And we're looking at the war's effect on Sudanese, the humanitarian crisis in Sudan since the war that's taking place there since April 2023. And as you're talking about Medicine Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, they just released a report yesterday, July 22nd, and they're talking about the effects on the civilian population, the violence against the civilian population. Do you see their report accurate and what is happening on the ground?
Absolutely. I was able, they sent the report first thing when they it was released. We circulated it around and I have looked into the report, and absolutely and unfortunately, it is true what they are saying.
Also, today on July 23rd, the U.S. Secretary of State announced that there will be a peace talk scheduled in Switzerland with the rebel support forces and the Sudan Armed Forces, the Sudanese government. Do you have any hope for those peace talks, considering that the U.S. has been very slow in supporting Sudanese people, particularly as it deals with their ally UAE and its role in the conflict? And those peace talks are scheduled for August 14. That's August 14, 2024.
Well, any effort that the international community take or the United States government and others take, we appreciate it and I think it's needed. But unfortunately, I think they are putting their effort in the wrong place, like invitation of the parties for how long and how many times they have been invited to negotiation, including the meeting that happened in the last 2 weeks in Addis, whereby it was led by the African Union Peace and Security Council. There was also humanitarian convening in Geneva last week. And it has resulted in nothing. So what is needed is very clear. People are crying out. The people who are impacted, civil society groups, international NGOs, humanitarian organizations are clearly crying for civilian protection efforts. And we have talked to the member state of the Security Council, including the United States. And Switzerland is also sitting right now in the Security Council as an elected member. And we also are calling for urgent delivery of humanitarian assistance. So people can't wait. People can't wait while they are negotiating. Like 2 weeks from now, how many people dying? On a daily basis, people die in hundreds. Today, I was talking to one of the civil society colleagues who insisted in staying in Al-Fashir, helping our people. But finally, she was able to flee because she was arrested and beaten by the rebel support forces. And she said, unfortunately, on our way going, a woman died on our way when we are fleeing, even as they are fleeing out of Darfur. So it is quite clear that the urgency, they don't treat the situation with the urgency, and the need on the ground is greater. So instead of asking people to wait 2 weeks to bring parties together, I think it's clear that the Security Council have been negotiating and people have been asking for this, that the Security Council must authorize forces. And that is the only time when the warring party cares, when they know that the international community is serious and that they are taking measures and also delivering humanitarian aid. The international community has activated, thankfully, the disaster response in Palestine. They also activated the disaster response in Ukraine. They did not say, let us wait until the parties negotiate ceasefire. But why Sudan is an exception? Unfortunately, this is the case. And I think the United States government need to show more leadership and need to be decisive for how long they have been dealing with Sudan. And these generals have been part of the previous government, and they are very well versed in negotiating, signing deals, but they never implement. But this is about people's lives. It is not about the generals, and it has to be about people. And we understand under international law, when people are put to suffer by their government or all actors, including the international community, is obligated under international human rights and humanitarian laws, they are obligated to provide civilian protection and humanitarian aid. And I think humanitarian aid should not be selective. It should equally be provided in all places where there is active war going, because priority has to be in keeping people alive before, while they are figuring out negotiation or dialogue.
Nimat Amadi, thank you very much for being on the show, and we look forward to having you at a future time, a future date, so we can understand the current situation in Sudan and how people can be in solidarity with Sudanese.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to working with you again. Thanks.
Again, that's Nimat Amadi. She is the president and founder of Darfur Women Action Group, and they're based here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. You can visit their website at www.darfurwomenactiongroup.org. Thanks again, Nimat.
Thank you for having me.
That was a recent conversation with Nimat Amadi. She is the president and founder of Darfur Women Action Group. In the conversation, she unpacks the humanitarian crisis in Sudan, the dire conditions Sudanese are facing due to a war in their country. And Nimat Ahmadi, who is the founder and president of the Darfur Women Action Group, is a member of the Advocacy Network for Africa, ADNA, of which I'm a member of, and she's part of the Sudan Task Force there. The music in the background is Gurima by Chinawiso Marere. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now the show features a recent conversation with Simogensine Shabalala of Ladysmith Black Mambazo on the musical group's history, culture, and education mission, tradition, and songs. Here is the conversation.
Is in Yambezi, no matemba, Bangishia, Zelangwa, no matemba, Bangishia, Zelangwa, no matemba.
And of course, that was the music of Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and the song is entitled Nomatemba, which means Mother of Hope. And we're delighted to have with us today Simogensine Shabalala of Ladysmith Black Mambazo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And I hope I pronounced your first name properly.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you could, before we get into the music, if you could explain to us the genesis of Ladysmith Black Mambazo. I know it was created in 1960. I don't think you were there in 1960, but if you could give us a background of that.
Yes, I was in there in 1960. It was formed by my father, the late Dr. Bhekisizwe Joseph Shabalala in 1960. The style of music is called isiqathamiya. He formed this group in 1960 because he wanted to help the people of South Africa, just to give them hope, because it was the time of apartheid and people were not in high spirits. So he wanted to give them something to look forward to. And he also wanted, through the music, to promote the spirit and the culture of South Africa of love, peace, and harmony throughout the world. And his wish was to uplift this music that we sing, the Zulu music, isiqathamiya, to be able to be also to compete on the world stage. So we are happy that all his effort and his dreams came true, because Ladysmith Black Mambazo ended up winning a first Grammy in 1987. And it was also introduced to the world by the collaboration of the album Graceland with Paul Simon.
Yes, and as you said, that your father, his spirit still lives today through your music, and what is the principle of hope, as we played that song, Nomatemba, which is, it's correctly, so it's the mother of hope. That's the meaning, right?
In Zulu. Yes, yes. It's a Zulu word. It's a name for the girl, which means hope, Nomatemba.
And your dad, He joined the ancestors on February 11th of 2020.
Yes. Yeah.
And which is interesting, that's also the same day that Nelson Mandela walked out of prison February 11th, 1990, 30 years earlier.
Yeah.
And they had a strong connection, the two of them, and it's a very interesting how somebody joining the ancestors. I'm just thinking that's just it's interesting when I saw that. Because as you know, in the African culture, you never go away. You're always there.
You are always there. You are joining the ancestors. You are always looking after the ones that you leave behind. And leaving this world, joining the likes, like you are saying, the great Babu Madiba, on the day that he was released from prison after 27 years, which was a day that my father always talked about, that it was a day that they had always been looking forward to. And he always told us about the story when they were watching from TV, because they were on tour. But it was just a wonderful day that he always remembered.
Again, that's Sibosigeni Shabalala of Ladysmith Black Mambazo. We're talking about the Ladysmith Black Mambazo, who are touring here in the USA, and they're also going to be here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area next week, July 30th. They'll be at the Birchmere, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But as you said, the collaboration with Paul Simon was a major milestone in the group's history. But it's not the only. Before we talk about that, let's listen to Homeless, which was actually put together, was written by your father, your late father, Joseph Shabalala, and Paul Simon, and they collaborated to, and it was played first on the Graceland album of Paul Simon, but it was one of the big songs for Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and then also for Graceland. Let's hear that first, and then we'll talk about the other collaboration.
Mawin mi ba silale mawin mi ba
silale mawin
mi ba
silale mawin we ba silale mawin we ba silale mawin
mi ba
silale mawin
mi ba
silale mawin
we ba
silale
Moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake. Homeless, homeless. Moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake.
And we are
homeless.
We are
homeless. The moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake.
And we are
homeless.
Homeless,
homeless. The moonlight sleeping on the midnight lake.
See your
young. See your young.
And in Homeless, the song is really addressing what was happening at that particular time, because this was recorded, of course, when apartheid was still in full effect. And so it's really addressing some of the internal displacement that was happening under apartheid, right?
Yes, it really addressed what was really going on in the country at the time, because people were trying to get their land back. They were fighting, and they were mostly displaced, as the song say, they were sleeping on the cliffs. But it also talks to people even nowadays that we should always look out for each other. We should always try to help people everywhere in the world where we see we can do whatever we can to help each other, and not just live and think of ourselves only.
Mm. And as we said before, this song is part of the collaboration, and you've collaborated with many other people in the many years that the Ladysmith Black Mambazo has been around. And one of the things I saw online was that in 2014, as you're celebrating 20 years of freedom in South Africa, you collaborated with the Royal Ballet in is it in England with the performance of it in Nala.
Yes, yes, we did that collaboration, which was partly orchestra and the ballet infusing this music of Ladysmith Black Mambazo there with the ballet dancers and the orchestra. So it was a very wonderful project, which was always the dream of our father, that to always try and introduce this kind of music, promote this kind of music that we sing in South Africa throughout the world, because through the music, people can learn the culture, they can learn to love each other. You know, they learn so many things through the music. So if we do these collaborations, it helps us and helps the people that we do collaborations with to reach the new audience.
And the collaboration is also, it brings in the African traditional spiritual culture music together with the spiritual music from like the United States, as I've seen. And I think your latest album you have, it's called Smooth My Soul, Songs from Our South African Church.
Yes, Smooth My Soul.
And is that album, is it also reflecting the traditional African spirituals together, connecting with the like spirituals from the United States? Well, of course, spirituals from the United States have a heavy African American component, which is African. So is the album also connecting with some influences from the traditional African heritage and then also the other parts of the world?
Yes, on the album, we go back to our times when we were, to our church times when we go to church, and we go back, we re-record those songs when we sang in our church back in South Africa, the tradition of singing the church songs. We also put it together with our style of singing, Isicathamiya, Ladysmith Black Mambazo. It's the album that we record right after COVID, after the pandemic, because we felt that people needed something that can uplift them and give them hope that even though we went through such a hard time, we still have the love of our Lord. God is still with us, and whatever happens, it happens because of Him agreeing with that. So we are going to be fine. We wanted to give the people the music that will uplift them, give them hope that there is always light at the end of any tunnel.
And also with the music, you have also a heavy choreographed presence on the stage, as people saw, especially with some of the people who were first. I mean, some of us were introduced, we knew of you before, but some of the other people got introduced to you from that Graceland African concert that took place in Zimbabwe many years ago in 1987. I think that was when that concert took place. When we had the late Yuma Sakela there, and then the late Mir Makeba as well, and then you had the choreography. When people first saw the choreography of that, the steps you have, if we could explain the movements that you do and who does it, and also the steps that you have, you're stepping on the ground but very lightly in a way.
That is the style that is called Isicathamiya, because this music was founded a long time ago during the times when people left their homes and went to work in the mines. And it was only men that were working there. And when they stayed there, they got homesick. And then they started singing the music that they used to sing back home. So the Zulu culture, they started singing their music. And then they realized that, hey, it doesn't sound the same now because it's only men that are singing. And then they started imitating those small high voices that are sung by young boys, by women back at home. And then that is how the style of the music is Isicathamiya started by those men who started to sing back there at the mines in their hostels. But then when you sing this type of music, the Zulu music, you are not finished until you do the Zulu dance. And when you do the Zulu dance, you have to lift your leg up and put it down, stomp the floor very hard and make a sound, a big sound. But because of the places that they lived at those times, it was very difficult because they were making noise for other people that stayed around them. So instead of stomping the floor, they started to touch the floor. Do the same dance, but don't stomp the floor to make the noise, but just touch the floor. And then that movement was called Totoza Isicathamiya. And when they went back home and started doing the same movements that had been doing, the people back home, they said, oh, the guys are not stomping anymore. Now they are tiptoeing, touching the floor. And the praise name became Isicathamiya music. So this tradition goes on until, because the music that we sing, so you always start the music, you sing, but you always have to put the choreography and start dancing and doing the same style, the Zulu dance, but not stomping the floor, but touching the floor, because now we are doing Isicathamiya.
Oh, that's very fascinating. Yeah.
And so by songs, it differs in songs and songs. So we do a special choreography that goes with what we are saying in the songs.
And also, we forgot to mention at the beginning, I wanted you to us to explain also the name Lady Smith Black Mambazo, because yes. Lady Smith is the town, but Black Mambazo is, if you can explain to our audience about that.
Yes, Lady Smith Black Mambazo is the town where my father grew up. And the tradition with this music is, like I was saying, people from they came from all over the country. And when you are naming your group, you always want people to know that you are so-and-so from where. So Lady Smith represents the hometown where we come from. But then Black Mambazo, if we start with Black, my father, when he grew up in the farm, he used to plow. So he used a certain span of oxen to plow when he was working in the farm. And there was different colors there, but he discovered that the black ones were stronger than the other span of oxen colors that they were using at the farm when they were plowing. So he wished his group to be powerful like those span of oxen that he used to, that they used to work with at the farm. And then Mambazo is a chopping axe. An axe is something that people use very more often in the farm to cut the trees, to pave the way when you are going to build your house, whenever you want to get inkuni to make fire so that you can make food or do whatever you want to do.
By the way, inkuni is a wood.
That word just ran away, so I decided to use my Zulu word inkuni. Thank you that you understand what it is. Yeah, so to cut the woods and do all that, you need an axe. So my father wished the voices of his group to be able to pave the way so that they can have a better future. So that's why he named his group Lady Smith Black Mambazo, black, thinking about those span of oxen that were powerful, and then X to be able to chop to be able to pave the way for themselves to a better future. So it's Ladysmith, Black Mambazo.
And speaking of the future, you're going to be here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area on July 30 at 7:30 p.m. at the Birchmere Hall. In Alexandria, Virginia. And people can get information up for that event at the birchmere.com. That's birchmere.com. And also, people can get more information on Ladysmith Black Mambazo on their official website is mambazo.com. And again, it's Mambazo, Mambazoz, as some of us say, .com. Yes. And that's the concert is going to be on the 30th. What should people expect on the 30th when you have the concert? Is it you're going to have music that they know of and also new music? Oh,
yes, yeah. Nowadays, because the Mambazo have so many records, but we always try to during this 90 minute to put everything together so that people can hear the old and the new music. So we have songs from Graceland, Homeless. We have songs that my father composed when he started the group. And then we have songs that we have just recorded that we are going to hear from our latest album, this one that is called Soothe My Soul. So it's going to be a very nice show, very energetic with the dancing and singing and Zulu dance and also singing with the audience. We like when we interact with the audience, teaching them some of our Zulu names so that they can have something to learn while they are watching our show. So it's a very good show. Family can all enjoy the show that we are doing.
And speaking of family, you're part of the family. How many from the family are in the group, and also how many have been in the group? Because this, we're saying the group has been there since 1960, but it's not everybody from 1960 that's in the group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right now, we have one older member who has been with the group since 1974. And then there is four brothers, the sons of the late Dr. Joseph Shabalala, the founder of the group. There's four brothers in the group who joined the group in 1993. And then we have our newest member. He joined the group in 2016. Somewhere around there, yeah.
So it's a very intergenerational group. So it's, in a way, it's you're living the legacy of Joseph Shabalala, where you're saying, in the name of the spirit of the name, paving the way for the future. So it's, it looks like it'll be a continuous grouping. It's just going to continue.
That is what we wish for. We don't want this legacy to end with us. We want it to continue. That is why we are trying by all means to revive the dream of our father of building the music academy in South Africa, where all the indigenous music of South Africa will be preserved and be taught to the younger generations. So we are working on that dream to come through. We have started our own Ladysmith Black Mambazo Mobile Academy, where we go to schools, we go to the community. We encourage the young people. We tell them the story of Ladysmith Black Mambazo, how it started, how Bab Shabalala was able to overcome all the obstacles that he had at the time growing up from the farm and being able to take his group to the world stage. So we try to do that to give hope to other people so that this music will not end with us. This Ladysmith Black Mambazo will not end with us. We'll also continue, because it is our tool to teach and to pass on the tradition of loving, of peace, of helping each other as people in all over the world.
Yeah, thank you very much for the music. And before we go, I don't know if you have a song which you would like us to go out with you'd like us to hear.
If you can play the song that my father composed, which is called "Hello, My Baby." If you can play, if you have that song, yeah, please play that one.
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, that Sibongi Seni Shabalala.
It means celebrate with us. We have a son.
Celebrate with us. And of course, that is the son of the legendary Joseph Shabalala, who was the founder of Ladysmith Black Mambazo. And he's continuing his father's footsteps with Ladysmith Black Mambazo. And they are going to be at the Birchmere on July 30 at 7:30 p.m. in the Birchmere Music Hall in Alexandria, Virginia. For more information, go to thebirchmere.com. That's BIRCHMERE.com. And for more information of Ladysmith Black Mambazo, their latest music and all the other music they've been performing in the last 64 years. Is at mambazo.com. That's mambazo.com. Thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for talking about Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
And we're going to continue. We're going to have now you will be listening to one of their famous songs, "Hello, My Baby."
Yes.
I beautiful baby, hey, baby, before I'm going, come along, come along to kiss me. Before I'm going, come to kiss me, nice, nice. Before I'm going, come to kiss me, nice, nice. Before I'm going, come along, come along, come along.
I send a messenger to tell you that I want to meet you at the station. Come along to kiss me. Before I'm going, come along to kiss me. Before I'm going, come to kiss me. Nice, nice. Before I'm going, come to kiss me. Nice, nice. Before I'm going, come along, come along, come along.
Hello,
hello, hello, my baby.
Hello,
my baby.
Hello,
my baby. Hello, my baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my sweet.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my sweet.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my
baby.
Hello, my sweet.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my
baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my
sweet.
Hello, my
baby.
Hello, my
baby. Hello, my
baby. Hello, my sweet.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my
baby. Hello, my baby. Hello, my baby. Hello, my baby.
Hello, my
baby.
Hello, my
baby. Hello, my baby.
Hello, my sweet.
Hello, my baby.
Hello, my
baby.
Hello, my
baby. Hello, my baby.
Hello, my sweet.
Hello, my baby.
Hello.
Oh my baby, oh my baby, oh my baby.
And that was a recent conversation with Simbogiseni Shabalala of Ladysmith Black Mambazo on the musical group's history, culture, and education mission, tradition, and songs. The music in the background is Yarabi by Sona Jobate. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muiza Muntali. Up next is Headline News. That's followed by Sharanana with Zain Al-Amin, which looks at Arab culture and politics, particularly in the Northern African region and also in the Middle East, and also the situation of Palestinians in Gaza and beyond. And after that is the women's collective Sophie's Parlor, and that's followed by Human Rights and Justice with Nakichi Taifa, and that's followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly, which is followed by Combit La Kai with Eugenia Charles, which looks at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host, James Pope. And thanks to our engineers, Michael Nicella and Kalia Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Fonangonda, and our Africa World Now Project collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan-Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdersen. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. Continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. We're going to leave you the closing song entitled We Who Believe in Freedom, also known as Ella's Song by Sweet Honey in the Rock, remembering Dr. Bernice Johnson Reagan, scholar, culture activist, founding member of the Freedom Singers of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, and also founder of Sweet Honey in the Rock, who joined the Ancestors on July 16. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
You believe in freedom, cannot rest until it comes. You believe in freedom, cannot rest. Hear me talking to you. You believe in freedom, cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black men. Mother's sons is as important as the killing of white men. White mother's sons, we who believe in freedom.
Sing it with me if you like it.
We who believe in freedom and not freedom tonight. Older I get, the better I know that the secret of my going on is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm. Cause to me, young people come first. They have the courage where we fail. And if I can but shed some light, I may carry us through the gales. We who believe in freedom and our rest. Hear me talking to ya. We who believe in freedom and our rest. Come tell ya. Struggling myself, don't need a whole lot. I've come to realize that teaching others to stand up and fight is the only way my struggles survive. I'm a woman who speaks in a voice, and I must be heard. At times I can be quite difficult about no man's word. We
WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. President Joe Biden will address the country from the Oval Office tonight, his first public appearance since he backed out of the presidential race on Sunday. Biden is expected to defend his legacy and promote the candidacy of Vice President Kamala Harris, who he endorsed shortly after he announced the end of his campaign. Harris attended her first campaign rally yesterday in the swing state of Wisconsin.
The path to the White House goes through Wisconsin. Yes, it does. And to win in Wisconsin, we are counting on you right here in Milwaukee. And you all helped us win in 2020. And in 2024, we will win again.
Harris highlighted her record as California Attorney General, in contrast with the criminal convictions and allegations against her opponent, former President Donald Trump. The vast majority of Democratic Party delegates have pledged their support to Harris, making her the presumptive nominee. Harris has raised over $100 million in campaign donations since Sunday. Yesterday, congressional leaders Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries joined Biden in endorsing Harris for president. Thousands of protesters are converging in downtown Washington, D.C. today to protest the appearance before Congress of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Large steel barriers surrounded Capitol complex entrances today, and police officers from out of town were called in to support local cops. Overnight, hundreds of anti-war protesters staged a sit-in at a congressional office building. Capitol Police said about 200 protesters were arrested, while protest organizer Jewish Voice for Peace said many more than that had been arrested. Netanyahu is expected to call for renewed U.S. support for Israel's deadly war in Gaza, which has officially killed over 39,000 people. Netanyahu's trip was organized by congressional Republicans, and his address will be boycotted by a number of Democratic lawmakers. Various Palestinian political factions signed a joint statement yesterday in Beijing, pledging to create a unity government, the culmination of days of negotiations hosted by Chinese mediators. China's foreign minister hailed the agreement and said he hopes the factions, quote, will achieve Palestinian independence at an early date on the basis of internal reconciliation, end quote. Israel's top diplomat rejected the agreement and said, quote, Hamas's rule will be crushed. Several such agreements between the Gaza-based Hamas and West Bank-based Fatah have been signed in the past, but none have succeeded at producing a unified Palestinian government. But the scale of devastation in Gaza and growing international support for a Palestinian state could push the factions closer together. Just last week, the UN's top court said Israel is responsible for systematic discrimination against Palestinians and ordered it to evacuate illegal settlements, end its occupation of Palestinian territory, and pay reparations. Monday was the hottest day ever recorded globally, beating a record set just a day before. Data from a European climate agency, Copernicus, showed that Monday was just slightly hotter than Sunday, and possibly the hottest day in 120,000 years. The previous record before Sunday was set only a year ago, and the record before that was set in 2017.